Hello, this is episode Christmas of Smooth Traffic. Merry Christmas to you all. I hope you're having a lovely time and that you aren't eating mince pies because they are absolutely disgusting, revolting, horrible, horrible things. So what have you got to look forward to in the Christmas edition of Smooth Traffic? Well, Ben Lazarus Pierce is here, obviously.
Hello.
Being himself. And the other guy is here as well.
Hello.
He is also being himself, and I'm here as well with a headache, but persevering to record this podcast for your Christmas. If you're going to be thankful for anything this Christmas, be thankful for being able to hear my voice on this podcast.
What a fucking Christmas miracle.
Oh dear. So on this episode, we're going to do a little bit of Christmas chat, obviously, as you do. You can hear some mince pie thoughts in that as well, so we can recommend you a mince pie for this Christmas.
Mince pie mega test.
Yeah.
We've eaten mince pie so you don't have to.
Exactly, and that is a very unselfish thing to do. There'll be the usual segments, Johnny on Art, and a quiz, because there always seems to be a quiz popping up. And there's also going to be some talk about clothes as well, and a couple of Ford commercial vehicles, because still do cars occasionally. Have you got any Christmas jokes? They're quite popular at this time of year, aren't they? You don't really hear Christmas jokes at any other time of the year.
Funny that.
Well, it depends who you hang around with, John.
I don't hang around with Santa.
Alright. So, it's Christmas!
Hooray!
Again. And we're doing another episode of Smooth Traffic. Again.
Just for Christmas.
But this Christmas is a special Christmas. Because it's the first Christmas where you're employed, Johnny. Hey. I mean, not for the first time
in
your life.
That's
not true. No, but all right. It's the first Christmas where Johnny is employed in an office environment.
Yes.
So he gets to enjoy all the intriguing delicacies of an office Christmas.
And hashtag Bants. Is that what it is?
Don't do that, Ben. Don't.
That's a voucher straight away.
Definitely.
Right at the start of the episode. The
Merry Christmas,
special.
You filthy animal. Have
Get
a voucher.
Downstairs.
So, my question to you, John, how are you finding Christmas in an office so far?
You know what? Having worked in... Actually, I can name companies and shame, can't I? Having previously in my life worked for... and Christmas in an actual proper business, proper company, is amazing. Because what happens in retail is you get flogged to within an inch of your life, and if you don't do anything quite right, you're obviously scum and all of the other rude words that I'm going to try not to say this Christmas. But yeah, like, it's been amazing. You know, the Secret Santas, the Christmas jumper days that we do for charity and stuff, and just people bringing stuff in, like boxes of chocolates and, you know, that sort of thing. It's been great.
It's true, because typically most businesses quieten down a little bit over Christmas because they don't want to get involved in anything, you know, big or interesting or complicated. But in retail, it's just like all hands to the deck, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's horrendous. I mean, working in retail at any time of the year is horrendous. It's just a thankless job, isn't it? But yeah, having, you know, being in an office environment and, you know, having treats and stuff, brilliant. I mean, I've managed to organise Cheese Day at work.
Mega. I'd imagine you've added a few inches to your waistline as well.
Oh yeah, I'm packing 30 to 40 kilos of basically extra cheese, yeah, just
bit
around the waistline. No, I don't really go for the chutney, Ben. I just like good quality cheese. But anyway, Cheese Day became such a huge thing at work. I had no idea it was going to snowball like it did, or cheese ball like it did. And there were people bringing in like 8-pound cheeses, posh crackers from Bath.
8 pound in weight.
8 pound as in like currency for a cheese. Like, that's decadent.
It depends how big the cheese is.
Yeah. It wasn't that big.
Three tons of cheddar.
That's a bargain. 8 pound of Big Mac cheese. Our lorry turns up. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, we had like orange and champagne flavoured cheese. There was cheese with ginger in, cheese with fruit in, smoky sort of cheddars and various cheeses and all sorts of crackers. And oh, it was brilliant.
Did anyone disappoint you in bringing a Baby Bell?
No.
Or a cheese string.
There was none of that. There was the chap who I worked with called James, lovely bloke. He is from Hull, and he said he was going to bring in like baby bells or cheese strings or something, and we mercilessly ripped him apart for being from Hull and thinking that was a delicacy. And to be fair, that's absolutely true. People from Hull do think things like that are a delicacy, because as we know, Hull is a horrendous place. But you know, we had delightful cheeses. We've still got cheese in the fridge now. We couldn't get through it all. There were people coming from upstairs with more cheese. It was incredible. It was incredible. I mean, I ought to talk you through all the cheeses really, but as Cheese Report is officially a banned segment on Smooth Traffic, I can't really go into further detail. But it was an amazing day. Obviously, I was in heaven, and I wrote 2,500 words that day as well, on top of just eating all the cheese, which proves that cheese can solve any problem.
Well, I'm pleased that you've enjoyed the office atmosphere for Christmas, John.
Yeah, loving it. And loving it. I'm so fat.
Because it's Christmas, in the spirit of goodwill to all men and all that palaver, if you'd like to do a cheese report of your two favourite cheeses from Cheese Day, now is your opportunity.
What are you doing?
It's Christmas, Ben. I'm feeling festive and kind. And
it's a couple of weeks before Christmas.
Not by the time I've edited this and release it.
I know that one of you guys had a question in our Smooth Traffic WhatsApp chat, home of all sorts of horrendous things being said and done, about cheese being served with Christmas cake in Yorkshire.
What the hell is that all about? That is disappointingly weird.
Well, in Yorkshire, it's traditional to have fruitcake with Wensleydale. You have some fruitcake and you have some Wensleydale with it. That's just the way it is up here.
Where does that originate from?
From Yorkshire.
No, I've been bad.
Oh, I think I know this. It's probably because cheese is normally the same colour as marzipan, and they probably didn't have any marzipan, so they just put cheese on instead.
No, it's not that.
I hope that's the reason. Theory. That would be amazing.
It's just that they're two sort of luxury items, aren't they?
They are both treats.
Well, why not have caviar on your cheese instead?
But it's Yorkshire, not fucking Kensington.
You're such a southerner, Ben. Honestly, how London did you just sound? You're a disgrace, Ben.
Who said, I've got some fruitcake? Tell you what, nice dollop of cheddar. I mean, come on. Do they not
have any
cream?
Who even talks about caviar? Who even talks about caviar, Ben, apart from Russian oligarchs? Honestly, what a disgrace. But it's just like two treats together, basically. And, you know, it's kind of just a thing up here. So Christmas cake and Wensleydale, or cheese of your... mild cheese, obviously. You don't want it to be too powerful. Like, we wouldn't have bloody Stilton with Christmas cake, would you? Christ.
Because that's where the line is.
That's definitely where the line is, yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's just a Yorkshire thing. I mean, I don't like Christmas cake, and I actually haven't tried Wensleydale yet. So...
You haven't tried Wensleydale?
No.
Ever.
And the reason I'm holding out now is because the Wensleydale factory with the Wensleydale Visitor Centre is within travelling distance.
Ooh.
So I feel like, as I like, you know, I like my whiskies. I go to a distillery to try a whiskey. I'm going to go to Wensleydale to try Wensleydale. I don't know if Wensleydale is actually a place or whether it's just the name of the cheese. But, you know.
You're going to let him do a cheese report and he has never tried Wensleydale. That's just disappointing.
Fine. John, I rescind the offer of a cheese report because it's Christmas right now on your cheese from the party. But I will allow you to do a cheese report on your trip to the Wensleydale factory. How does that sound?
It sounds like a middle ground as Ben is ruining Christmas.
Yeah. Boo!
You can do a review of one cheese.
Right, yeah, Wensleydale. And we want to hear all about the factory as well.
8 minutes into the recording, Ben is trying to ruin Christmas. Despite King starting off in good spirits, he's already had a voucher. He's trying to talk about caviar, and he's denying me a cheese report. He's denying goodwill to all men. Unbelievable.
Who knew I'd be the good guy here?
Yeah. King, yeah, King, you're the good guy today. And so am I, actually. I'm a good guy today as well. So there we go.
Marvellous. Well, we'll look forward to you reporting back from the Wensleydale factory in an upcoming episode of Smooth Traffic, shall we?
Yep, and if there's a zombie apocalypse breaking out, that's the first place I'm going.
Well, I'll phone ahead and let the Wensleydale factory people know. Make sure they lock the doors.
Johnny!
Hello! Hello, Ben!
What have you been driving?
Oh, I went to Peterborough the other day.
Oh, yeah?
And I drove some commercial vehicles. I'm going to tell you about two of them, because, you know, it was a Ford commercial vehicle event, so naturally there was a lot of transits there. And
that
drove...
sounds a little bit dull to start with, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
No, how many transits were there, John?
There was loads of transits.
Wow.
There was even the very, very first transit that was ever made there.
Are they struggling to sell them, are they?
Well...
Ben.
Well, Ben, if you read the SMMT statistics, you'd know that the Ford Transit Custom is something like the third best-selling vehicle in the entire country, passenger cars included, something like that. So
I know they're very good.
Ford aren't here right now on this podcast, but if they were, Ben, you'd be getting a very nicely branded Blue Oval voucher for the very nicely branded Blue Oval stairs. So I drove the Ford Ranger off-road only. Because we all know what pickup trucks are like to drive on the road. They're terrible. But off-road, amazing. The ability for that thing to find grip and go fishing and everything like Ray Mears would do is unbelievable. Can Ray Mears walk up a very steep, muddy slope? Yes, he can. Can a Ford Ranger do that on standard all-weather tyres? Yes, it can. Ray Mears can also stop on a steep slope. And say a piece to camera. The Ford Ranger will also do that because it was like a slope that was like 35-40 degrees. It was massive. It looked like I was driving into the Great Wall of China, but a really dirty part. It was just massive and really high. But I got halfway up, and then my instructor, who's an instructor at Silverstone, who does all sorts of racing, historic cars, he's an amazing bloke, great to talk to. He said, just stop there, put the handbrake on. And we did, and it stayed there. It didn't roll back down. And then, thanks to hill hold, you know, the technology that we all have in all of our cars now, I could just do some incredible clutch control that really I should have got some sort of certificate for. and drove over the top to continue my expedition in the same way that Ray Mears would. So can Ray Mears wade through deep water? Yes, he can. And that's exactly what I did in the Ford Ranger. Can Ray Mears also drive down a river or walk down a river? Yes, he can. I drove down a river, an actual river or a stream, something like that anyway. It had water flowing, so it must have been some sort of river. But yeah.
It could have also basically been a Travelodge bathroom after you'd had a shower.
Well, actually, I think that was a Premier Inn, wasn't it? So...
I doubt we'd have spent out on a Premier Inn, would we?
No, it was a Travelodge.
Oh,
sorry, John.
I thought I got away with it. So yeah, basically, if you want a vehicle that can do what Ray Mears can do, you need to buy a Ford Ranger because, like, the off-road capability and its ability to like go over like, I don't know what you call them. What's it like when
hills?
The chassis twists and stuff, gradients or something? Or no, it's not that. Like, you know when it all goes wonky?
Camber.
I don't know, something like that. You know what I mean. Like when one wheel's like being pushed right down and the other one's like up in the air.
Pickup trucks
in the air, that sort of thing.
An uneven road, yep.
Yeah, those sorts of things.
Adverse camber.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
A bit more extreme than that, I'm thinking.
I don't understand science. Science is just magic with an instruction manual.
quite a nice way to put it.
But yeah, it was amazing. And the tyres weren't anything special. They were just standard all-weather tyres, and it was muddy as well. So there was the potential there to lose a lot of grip and to do things incorrectly. But it was really easy to do. I think I couldn't have done it unless I'd had an instructor, you know, telling me like when to put the power on and how to sort of, you know, do it properly, positioning the car and stuff. But it was great, and it was so capable. And I didn't really know that. I mean, you sort of hear about what pickup trucks can do off-road, but until you actually do it, you don't really have such an appreciation for it. But I do now, big time, and I can see why the Ranger is such a popular vehicle, because it is massively popular now. It's kind of taken a lot of what probably would have been in the old days, like farmers buying Land Rover Defenders and stuff. You see a lot of farmers now with Ford Rangers, especially up here in Yorkshire. You see loads of Ford Rangers like driving around the farm roads and stuff. Affordable and capable. And, you know, rock hard as well. And that's probably what you want, isn't it? If you're driving around on a farm chasing cows and stuff for no reason. I know that's what I'd want. Makes sense to me. But, yeah, it just made me think of Ray Mears, basically. What a guy.
We can see that.
So basically, if you can't get a Ford Ranger, you should try and get Ray Mears and have him carry you around. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely, because he always has a backpack, doesn't he? And he's always equipped and ready to go, much like the Ford Ranger is, because he's always got khaki on, and he's always got that like walking pole. And the Ranger's got navigation as well, and Ray Mears always knows where he's going. So if you can't have a Ford Ranger, Ray Mears is definitely your next best bet.
What else did you drive then?
Well, I drove a prototype, and if I was one of the
major...
So
you can't review it then?
No, I'm not going to review it. There's no danger of that. I'm not one of the major UK motoring publications. But what I will say is...
good reason for that.
Cheeky. I think that could really change a lot of things, because I've driven a few vans over the last few months, as you might have heard in previous episodes, you know, Mercedes Sprinters and Vitos and stuff, and even the diesel Transit I drove on the day there as well. They're all noisy, but an EV Transit is not noisy because it's running on electric power only. And one of the most wearing things you can get as a driver when you're doing journeys is noise, road noise, you know, wind noise, tire roar, engine noise. All of these things wear on you after a certain amount of time driving, and not having a loud clattery diesel engine is going to improve driver fatigue, I think, and in turn that could improve road safety in a bigger picture, you know, as well as like extra technology and stuff we'll see coming in and have already. So I think that's quite exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing it when it's sort of fully launched. I think 2020, they said. There's still quite a long way to go, but I know there is a few Transit EVs running around London at the moment in the hands of various firms who've been given them to sort of try and, you know, see how they get on with them, basically, and sort of do some, I suppose it's like testing, I suppose. And they've had good feedback so far, so that's quite exciting.
So in conclusion, if you're going to get your bathroom done again, wait until 2020, when your tradesman will have an electric van, slightly less tired, and might do a better job.
Yeah, and he won't put your bath on upside down.
Yeah. Often happens.
All the time. I can't get in that!
Well, I have to say, John, that's probably one of the most insightful things you've ever said on this podcast, that it will save on driver fatigue just by switching to electric from diesel, because diesel vans are noisy. And if you're working with that all day, every day, it does take a toll.
Yeah, like if you're doing anything where there's like loud noise is a, you know, it drains your stamina, your overall stamina. So I know this anyway, because I drive in a bath with an Akrapovich exhaust for 2 hours to get to Harrogate and back. And, you know, I want to kill myself after about 35 minutes a lot of the time, especially in the morning when I have no temper, no patience and no niceness about me. So I can imagine what it's like for a driver to have to drive around in a horrible diesel van all day. I know, King, you've driven quite a lot of vans.
Yeah, you used to do that for a job, didn't you?
Lutened-bodied vans. I think you had Mercedes, didn't you, King?
Yes. And we had a Peugeot as well, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, most of the fleet were Mercedes, though.
Yeah, it's good that, you know, things are going to get quieter, I think, for people who drive commercial vehicles anyway. And I don't know what the range will be like or anything yet. You know, they told us what the range is at the moment and stuff on the event, but I don't see the point in telling the public what that range is, because I think it'll change in the space between the prototype being driven and the actual launch in a couple of years' time.
You think they could be potentially quite big, because obviously normally the batteries are put in the floor pan, you know, aren't they, on a car, right, you know. And it's space is an issue, but with a van, you potentially got loads more space.
Yeah,
to put the batteries in. So,
yeah, I think it could be. I mean, I don't know how it's affected by load and stuff like that from, you know, doing your rounds. But yeah, I think
that's true. If you put a ton of batteries in there, then the new Transit can take 30 kilograms of stuff. Sorry, we filled it with batteries.
Yeah. So. We'll see how it goes, but I think that was the impression that I got anyway, and I didn't drive it for long because obviously there's lots of people wanting to drive it and write 2,000 reviews on it about why you should buy it and how much it will cost, and this is, you know, all of this stuff. If you want to know why you should buy one, head over to your latest major publications and they'll tell you all why. I don't believe in talking about pre-production cars as something that is a finished product, but the impression that I got was that over time because commercial vehicle drivers spend a lot of time in their vans, it could be quite a big deal. This is Edge on Art. I know everything about art. I've been to the Louvre.
So I know we upset you a bit last week, Johnny, with the AI art. So I've bought you something a little bit more interesting.
This better be good, Ben, because last week you actually ruined me. I was upset for a long period of time, and I was.
Can I just say, John? If you like this, I found this. But if you don't like it, I sent it to Ben and said maybe we shouldn't give him this, and he said no, it'll be fine. So I'll take full responsibility. I found this, and I thought it's a nice blend of two things that you like.
Yeah, it blends two of your favourite worlds. So here you go.
Okay.
Fingers crossed.
Have a look at that. That, my friend, is a combination of art and cars.
I've heard about something similar being done with Fiat 500s before, where Fiat 500s were used as planters.
What? So this is what I've sent Johnny is a Citroen 2CV, which has been tweaked to look like a Picasso, basically.
Yeah, the interesting thing about this is that it doesn't look any worse than a normal 2CV. Does it? It doesn't. It doesn't look out of place or anything.
The fact it was a 2CV was the only thing that concerned me about whether you'd get on with this piece, shall I call it.
I mean, I've never driven a 2CV, but I can't see that I'd ever want to be honest.
I don't get the hype, but anyway.
You know Chris Harris from Top Gear?
Mm.
He absolutely loves 2CVs, he owns one. And I think anyone who says they like a 2CV is car hipstering a little bit. You know what I mean? Because there is no way on earth that is going to be anything like good to drive. Not at all, but
certainly
I like
when
that.
It's been Picasso'd.
No, not. I mean,
well, let's talk about it as a piece of art then.
I like it. I like it.
Marvellous. We've succeeded, Ben.
Hey. Yeah, definitely succeeded in not making me sad, which is nice. As a piece of art, what is this trying to say? Well, what it's trying to say is, if you get into a car accident, this is what you can end up looking like. Especially if you're driving a 2CV, because as we all know, they're made from the same material that is, you know, found in your bedding. It's very, very easy to.
Do you think if you had an accident in that 2CV, it would put it back to normal?
There's only one way to find out, really, isn't there? If we had a budget, we could buy that car and then crash test it somehow. But sadly, we don't.
I don't want to volunteer to be in the driver's seat.
There's no danger of that, Ben, because you're hardly ever in the driver's seat, as we all know.
That's true.
You're always on a train. There's no carriages on that, Ben, so you wouldn't be able to find your way in. But I think that's great. Full credit to Andy Saunders, who seems to be the bloke who's designed and built this. I don't know why he's wasted his money doing it, but hey, it's his money.
If there are 2CV enthusiasts out there, they're presumably pretty annoyed that a working decent version has been sort of knackered.
Picasso'd.
Painting. Well, let's face it, if there are any 2CV enthusiasts listening to this podcast, it'll be the motoring podcast, because they scream 2CV to me. I bet Alan and Andrew love 2CVs. I can just see them rocking around in one. It just fits. I just see them exactly as they are, plodding around in a 2CV. I bet they love it. I bet they absolutely love it. But I like this arty 2CV more than I do the normal 2CV, which is a bit like saying I prefer unused toilet paper to used toilet paper, but you know what I mean.
I mean, I don't think you'll find many people that wouldn't agree with you on that, John.
Yeah, that's true.
Who walks around going, ooh, used toilet paper. What a treat.
Yes. That's the good stuff.
Well, I suppose at least you know it's been tested.
True. Crash tested.
Used once. Slight stain.
Skid marks all over it. But yeah, this, I mean, it doesn't say anything artistically, I don't think. I mean, there's nothing to it. It's just, you know.
I think it definitely says it's Picasso, doesn't it?
It's an homage to Picasso.
Yeah. I mean, I don't get the people who say that cars are art. I don't think cars are art. I think they're just, you know, nicely designed. I don't think there's, you know, cars that should be in an art museum or anything like that.
None at all.
There's no connection there for me. But I mean, great designs. If you put a design museum, that's different, I think. But an art museum is something else. I don't think cars belong in an art museum.
That's a very valid distinction, John.
Well, you know, I'm trying to. I feel like I'm on form today. I feel like I've got my eye in, and I'm not just talking nonsense. Maybe this is something I should try and do more, or maybe not. Maybe we'll get 100 emails saying no. Keep being a bellend.
Stop being a dickhead again.
The opposite to what everyone's been telling me my whole life.
Good. Well, I'm good pleased find. You enjoyed that, Johnny.
Well, if you've been listening to the podcast a lot recently, then you need psychological help. But other than that, and if you've ever met Ben in the flesh, you may have noticed that he's a bit of a cultural void.
How would you have met him in the flesh? No one knows who he is. And also, no one can tell
you know,
who he is.
You go into a shop, you see a mannequin, you think, is that Ben? Is it a mannequin? And you don't talk to it, because if it's a mannequin, you look mental. And if it's Ben, you know that he won't be able to hold a conversation because he's a cultural void.
He is. He is.
Now,
hugely.
This may seem a little bit harsh, because Ben is Ben, but there's logic here. I get a lot of stick for being very old-fashioned and stuck in my ways, but I'm more up-to-date with what's hip than Ben is.
Phrases like hip aren't hip, I think.
I don't think you're in any position to talk about this. Anyway, what we've decided, and by we I mean John and I, is that we're going to help Ben learn more about the culture of the world today.
Yes.
In this brand new segment, which we haven't come up for a proper name for yet, but we're thinking something along the lines of Ben's cultural awareness. So, to get a baseline, John has devised a quiz so that we can gauge just how much or how little Ben actually knows about anything that's outside of his little comfort zone.
Yes.
I'm not going to come out of this looking good, am I?
Which, of course, Ben's comfort zone is basically revolves around technology, banking, and sex toys. So there are none of those questions involved in this part of the about the quiz here. We've got a little bit about art, a little bit about culture, and just, you know, people and places. You know, basic stuff, basically.
I think people's where he'll struggle most. I mean, I haven't seen the questions, but I think people is where he'll struggle most.
It could be.
I'm terrified by all of those.
Now, a lot of this quiz, Ben, is who or what is. So, okay. Adding further jeopardy to you here. But I have taken it easy on a few of these. There are some really easy ones in here, Ben. Like, really, as in, like, primary school sort of questions in here. So, hopefully, you'll be able to get them.
Hang on, John. This coming from the man who didn't understand the water cycle. Let's not be throwing around the primary school kids should know this.
I don't think primary school kids get taught the water cycle, though. I think that's like maybe
sixth
form.
Yes, they do.
Form. I think that's maybe sixth form or university stuff. But we're not here to talk about my learning annex anyway. We're here to talk about Ben's cultural awareness. So I've devised a scoring system. Originally there was 10 questions. I've added, I think, one or two more, but it doesn't matter anyway, because he's never going to get all of them right anyway. So, 0 to 2 answers is a cultural black hole.
Reasonable.
That's fair, isn't it? 3 to 4 correct answers is a cultural desert world.
Okay.
Maybe with a few crashed freighters on it, you know?
Yep.
5 or 6 is a cultural space wreck. Could be salvageable.
Okay.
7 or 8 is a cultural off-world base with 2 people in. So, not that cultural, but there's potential to grow something there. 9 or 10 correct answers is a cultural cheating bastard. And it's as simple as that. It'll have Wikipedia voice controls or something. Something technological. Oh, I don't know what it is. Anyway, so question 1, Ben.
Can I just interject, John?
No.
Are we going to... I'm doing it anyway. Are we going to time Ben to make sure he doesn't have time to Google things? Or are we just going to trust him?
Well, I think we should trust him because it's Christmas. And also,
good point.
His keyboard, we'll be able to hear that from a mile off, probably.
Oh, that's true.
So I think we'll be all right. And if he's using his phone, then he'll show himself up to be a bellend, won't he? as he always does anyway. So, yes, let's start this incredible journey into Ben's cultural chasm. So, Ben, question 1 is, who or what is Hagia Sophia?
I've literally never heard that name. I have no idea.
Well, the Hagia Sophia, Ben, is one of the world's most important monuments.
Is it?
In Istanbul.
You can tell it as a pop star or something.
No, it's like, it's very important. Everybody knows what it is anyway. King, do you mind keeping score? I don't think you'll have too hard of a job.
Where is it? What is it?
It's Istanbul. In Istanbul, Ben.
Right.
Which is Turkey.
I'm aware of that.
Question two is, who or what is Kodak Black?
Are you making this up?
Nope.
Oh, God knows.
Any ideas?
Well, it sounds like a funky brand of old school film, doesn't it? But...
Well, unfortunately, that is the incorrect answer. Kodak Black is actually an American rapper from Florida.
Of course it is.
So there we go.
He's got some interesting face tattoos, hasn't he?
I think he has, yeah. I think that's, I mean, that's quite the fashion nowadays, isn't it?
Have you heard of him, King?
I was thinking of getting one.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, Ben.
He's famous, Ben. He's famous. Really famous. I listen to his music. Anyway, question three. Who or what is Francis Bacon?
I'm just thinking, this feels more and more mean the further this goes.
No, it doesn't.
No, we knew. Francis... Oh, I've got no bloody clue. Is he an American football player or something?
Sadly not, Ben. He is a famous, famous artist, and actually one of my favourite artists who we haven't yet featured on Edge of Art. King, what's the score so far?
I've never heard of him.
Ben has attempted three questions, and he has scored 0 points.
That's unfortunate.
Just want to skip to the end where you say I've got zero.
Question four. Who or what is El Cid?
Oh, come on, Ben.
This is bread and butter, Ben. This is bread and butter. This is cultural bread and butter.
Come on, you are making this up, aren't you?
Nope.
El Cid?
El Cid. Everybody knows El Cid, Ben. Oh, dear.
No.
Well, he doesn't know. El Cid is a famous Spanish hero. Kind of like the King Arthur of Spain, I'd say. But he was real.
I was going to say he was a real person. He fought the Moors.
Yeah, he was.
King Arthur wasn't real?
A mighty warrior.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other discussion, so we won't get into that for now. But
Spanish hero.
Yeah, El Cid was famously propped up on his horse after he died to lead an army, just because of the positive morale boost that he gave all the troops. Fun fact for you there, Ben.
See, I thought you were going to ask me questions about modern stuff, like the Spice Girls.
Well, no, it's culture.
Okay, question, I think this is five.
Fine, Christ, are we only at five?
Who or what is Charminar? This is one of the harder ones, actually.
Charminar?
Charminar, yeah.
I feel like it's the sort of thing you'd eat at an Indian restaurant.
Well, you're right about it. It is actually Indian, Ben, but it's actually a monument, very famous monument in Hyderabad, India. My friend Raj is from Hyderabad. Shout out to Raj, who is far too intelligent to be listening to this podcast. question six, Ben. What is the capital of Turkey?
Istanbul.
Is the wrong answer. It's actually Ankara. Unfortunately, there, Ben.
Yeah.
We have to move on. Question seven, I think.
Do you want a score update?
Yeah. What's the score, King?
Ben has attempted to answer six questions.
Yeah.
He has successfully answered zero.
Oh dear. Question seven. This is hilarious.
I'm feeling really terrible, and I'm not even setting the questions.
Great. This is great. Question seven is one of the easy ones, Ben. Genghis Khan is a hero in which nation?
Oh, I should know this.
Everybody knows this, Ben. I put this in because it was easy. I thought, at least give him one. Oh, no.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, Ben, the correct answer is Mongolia. He was...
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
...the great Khan who conquered all of the world, basically. Give or take a few continents. Yeah. So the next question, Ben, is who or what is Petra?
Don't know. I feel like a Greek goddess or something.
He's not far off, though, is he, King? Really?
No, I think that's a good attempt.
He's in the right area in a way. I mean, it's not Greece; it's the Middle East. But you know, close. If you're throwing a dart at a map, it's not bad.
Yeah,
Petra, an incredible UNESCO World Heritage site in Jordan. Where there are huge buildings carved into rocks.
Ben, have you seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade?
Yes.
Yeah, where they go to see the Grail Knight, the exterior of that is Petra.
Yep.
Yeah.
Incredible place, incredible.
Of course it is. I remember now you say that.
Question 8. Alexander Ovechkin is famous for what?
Well, I don't know.
Well, Ben, the answer there is ice hockey. He's one of the world's best ice hockey players.
Is he?
Yep, he is.
He doesn't play for the Bracknell Bees. He can't be that good.
he doesn't, but Alexander, if you're listening and you fancy a loan move, call us. We'll sort it out.
Well, don't call us. We can't help him.
Yeah, we can. Question something. Who or what is Tracy Emin?
Ooh.
I don't know.
Well, Ben, Tracy Emin is a famous British artist from Croydon, which is in London, which is in England. last question.
Ben, can you tell us where Croydon is?
How many M's does 21 Savage have in his bank account?
What?
How many M's does 21 Savage have in his bank account? And there is a bonus question to this one as well.
So I don't really understand the question, so presumably this is some rapper and it's in his song, is it?
It is.
Which I obviously haven't heard. So. Does he have millions?
Well, he does have millions, but he actually has 8 M's in his bank account. And the bonus question is, Ben, how many shooters does he have ready to gun you down?
Does he have 8 of those as well?
He does! He does have 8 shooters ready to gun you down. So, according to this very thorough testing procedure, Ben, you've scored 1 point, which means you are a cultural black hole. So that might mean you're such a cultural void. We can't actually approach you to offer you the help you need.
We just have to throw facts in from afar and hope they get sucked in.
And just hope. Yeah, and just hope that somewhere on the other side, something good happens. That's kind of what we're just going to have to hope here. But, Ben, as you are... This is the thing. Ben is an incredibly intelligent individual. He just knows nothing about culture. So if you want to know how a rocket works, Ben can tell you. So I've devised a question for Ben to demonstrate his intelligence. It's a bonus question, just so he can redeem himself.
So you're setting me up for a massive fail here, aren't you?
No.
If the whole quiz wasn't already.
What John's doing, he's actually running his own segment of Johnny's Learning Annex, I think.
I've explained how the USB works.
So,
and fumbled around the kilogram last time.
Exactly. What do you want? Exactly. So you have demonstrated the considerable IQ that you do have, Ben. It's just unfortunate it's not particularly working.
I hope to God that this is a nice question, because I'm feeling really shitty right now.
So the non-culture question to redeem yourself is, how many times can you subtract 10 from 100?
I mean, only once.
Exactly. Only once. But and there, Ben...
Depends how many hundreds you've got.
There, Ben has proved his intelligence, because a lot of people would say 10.
Logic.
You know, because 10 tens go into 100, but...
I was trying to find out what the trick was.
Exactly.
I realised it was you, so it probably wasn't a trick.
Exactly. So Ben has redeemed himself and has showed us, well, throughout Smooth Traffic's historical episodes that nobody will listen to now, but he has shown on numerous occasions that he is a man of relative intelligence, and obviously much more than I am normally. But as I'm the quizmaster here, I get to sound all smug and high and mighty, which is amazing. So Ben, unfortunately you are indeed a cultural black hole, but we will come back to retest you now and then, and hopefully we'll have seen some progress and stuff.
I'm very slightly disappointed I didn't get a couple of those right.
Yeah,
a
couple. You and me both.
About Genghis Khan, I'm sure. And
I'd have let you have a point if you'd said where Croydon was.
Trying to think where that is. I want to say sort of south London, is it?
Bingo! Very
is it
good.
South London?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know which way London is round, to be honest.
It's kind of similar to the points of a compass. So North London is sort of to the top. South is south of London.
The top.
So you know, this is exactly what shows Ben up to be much smarter than John. Because John's thinking, oh, this is really helpful. Whereas Ben's clearly being incredibly facetious.
And that's how most of our conversations go when we're not recording as well. So yeah, there we go. Unfortunately, Ben is the cultural black hole we suspected he is, and now we must put him into an intense program to help him understand the world that he lives in.
We often reference our WhatsApp chats on the podcast, and there have been some crackers that we might share with you later. But one I want to bring up with you, Johnny, the other week you said, let's talk men's clothes on the podcast.
Yes.
Pretty much left it at that. I think we just ignored you and thought, just get on with our lives.
Because probably you don't want to delve into it when I say something random like that, but this is not a jokey segment, I would say. This is genuinely more sort of a men's kind of chat, I suppose.
Sartorial elegance discussion.
Well, no, because it's the clothes you wear every day, and the clothes I wear every day can never be classified as elegant. But
you speak for yourself.
I've been trying to buy new clothes recently because I'm getting fat. I'm incredibly fat. I'm disgusting person. I've been walking around a few different shops and a few different places because, unlike Devon, where I lived before, there are actually places you can buy clothes in Yorkshire, which is incredible. So I don't have to just order stuff from the internet anymore. I can actually go to places and look at clothes. And I've been in so many different men's clothing shops now, and, well, the experiences have just been terrible, basically. Absolutely terrible. I thought I'd run through a few, because we already have in our heads, don't we, a certain type of person who goes to certain types of men's clothing shops, for example. So I thought I'd reel off some clothing brands here and just see if you could just name the type of person you would think would go there. So, for example, like Next is like pretty good, I think. You know, like that's where I would say sort of fairly smart people go. Been in Next a few times. I get a few
a
stuff.
Tiny bit too fashionable for my liking on the main.
Yeah.
Set the cultural void.
Exactly. A few too many colours and patterns.
Yeah. And like Topshop, Bellends. Yeah, I think.
Bit hipsters. Yeah.
Hipsters, that sort of thing, yeah. Superdry.
Overpriced.
Yeah.
More quite nice materials, but and also too much branding. I can't be dealing with, like, why do you need to write that it's
all over it?
People where you've got your clothes from in, like, sort of 7-inch high lettering. What's that about?
It's like they're the new Gap.
Yeah.
Except they play their music too loud as well.
That's nothing worse than going to a shop that's, like, dimly lit, loud, and hot.
Oh, Hollister. Like, oh.
I've never stepped foot in Hollister.
It's a horrendous place.
You can't see anything when you go in.
The smell from outside is like, oh, why would you go in there? I smell like them.
It's very strange. It's very, very strange. The other,
I think
the other
it's
shop I was...
so dark so that you can't see the prices on what they're selling you.
Exactly.
I was in the Oracle shopping centre in Reading, and I walked past, and I think they had newly opened, and there were two people standing outside trying to entice you in. Mm. And there was a woman in like swimwear and a bloke in trunks, and they were both sort of greased up, and they're like, oh, do you want to come and have a look around?
Yeah.
I was like, no, I don't. Thank you very much.
Did you?
Why do I want a man in trunks trying to entice me into the shop that just stinks? You can smell it from about like 20 metres back.
Come and see our strip club.
Yeah. Did you know that Hollister only hire people who are very good looking as well?
Yeah, I'd heard that. Actually, yeah. They grab people on the street, don't they? And
allegedly.
Yeah. All greasy. I think they get recruited as well. it's very strange. I don't understand it myself. Apparently the clothes are quite good quality, but I mean, you know when someone's wearing a Hollister top, because obviously, again, you get the lettering, giant letters all over your T-shirt.
I used to date someone who worked in Hollister, and I heard quite a few horrendous stories.
What was his name?
About the just the
trunks
state of the state of the place and the people basically that work there, and it was meant to be not good in the slightest. What other shops was I thinking of? River Island, quite arty.
Do they have a men's section?
Yeah, quite.
Yeah, normally upstairs.
No. Yeah, upstairs.
River Island is a bit more of a niche version of Topshop, I would say.
Okay.
Still a little bit hipstery, but not as
nice. Yeah, I like that. I've been in all of these shops recently, and here's what I found out. Superdry, one of the cheapest.
Really?
One of the cheapest. Like you said, Ben, great fabrics and stuff, really decent. I've got a coat in there for 40 quid.
See, I was going to say, you can usually pick up a T-shirt for 40 quid in there, which is why I don't go in for things like that.
Proper coat for 40 quid. Doesn't have Superdry written all over it. It's quite subtle.
Okay.
Hoodies, 2 for 50. Good luck getting a hoodie that's not 40 quid in any of the other ones.
I reckon maybe you've got some sale up north or something, because that's way cheaper than down here.
Well, everything is cheaper up north, One of the other things I noticed was shirts for men and the fashion for men. Every single one of these shops, despite them all being a bit different, they're basically selling the same things in every single shop, which is the Czech shirts, sort of. Yeah. They're everywhere. You cannot escape. If you want to buy a shirt, you have to buy a Czech shirt because you can't get anything different. They're all the same in every shop. The only difference is the colours. Pretty average jeans, really. I got a pair of jeans in Next for 35 quid, I think.
Really?
Which is pretty good, I think.
I have to say, even though you slated it earlier, I've bought quite a lot of trousers from Gap recently because they do way more sizes.
I wasn't slating Gap. Always... I was just saying that they have their brand all over the... You know, like, that was Gap's big thing, that it was emblazoned on what you had.
Yeah. If you go in there for trousers and stuff, you know, most places you go in, like M&S will do, like, oh, they do a 30 waist, 32 waist, you know, and they sort of take sort of 2-inch steps. And then the trousers, they'll just say, like, 31, 33 or 32, 34 length, whatever. Whereas Gap, they literally do every combination. So I can get, like, a, you know, 29 or 30 waist with a 32 or 33 length. You know, you can pretty much pick and choose what you want. So they're quite good for that. And also, they've always got a sale on. They email me, like, weekly saying, oh, 40% off. So at full price, it's quite expensive. But when you get, like, 30, 40% off, actually, I think they're quite good value from there. But I can never find trousers that fit. Because M&S decided a while back that I can't buy trousers from them anymore because they don't do my size. Apparently, I'm too bloody skinny.
I mean, you are too bloody skinny, Ben, that's for sure. We need to get you on some cheese. But... But like,
go to their clothes the kids' clothes section. Maybe I can get some VAT from trousers instead.
You might actually.
No, I think your legs would be too long then.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. Yeah.
You're too tall to be a child, but you're not fat enough to be an adult.
Yeah, can't argue.
he's a glitch. It's been so frustrating trying to buy clothes because all these shops are basically the same. And the ones that I thought were going to be cheap are not cheap at all. They're really expensive. Next is. I always thought Next was fairly expensive as a clothing shop.
Yeah.
But it's actually, next to Superdry, probably the cheapest place I'm finding. Like, if you want a shirt, you're probably looking at 30 quid. Hoodies are between 40 and 60, from what I can tell. And, like, the materials and stuff, it just seems like shit quality as well. I cannot believe how expensive clothes are. I just don't know how people can afford to buy clothes. And this got me thinking about girls.
Well, people go to Primark.
I mean, I did look in Primark as well. I did pick a couple of things up in Primark. But even that's not as cheap as I remember it being. With 15, 20 quid for a shirt and stuff. So, I don't know what's going on there. But it got me thinking about girls. Because girls are buying clothes and makeup all the time. And all of that stuff must be incredibly expensive. I don't know how they do it. Because I've spent days and days of my spare time trying to find clothes, only to be confronted by the usual overpriced, cheap, fabric-y Czech shirts that are just awful. Thin jumpers for 60 quid. And general just tat. And I'm looking at things like, now, like, the Nike shop and stuff, getting jumpers in there. Because, like, at least that's good material, you know? I mean, it might not be the most fashionable thing in the world, but at least it's, like, thick. And it's going to keep me warm in winter, unlike most of the tat you're seeing around these places. I just wondered if any of you guys or any of the listeners have been, who are male, or I mean females might have some great opinions on this as well, who've been shopping for clothes and just been completely shocked by how you cannot buy. I mean, you're talking about spending at least 100 quid every time you go out if you want to buy clothes, and you're only going to get like 3 items for that. It's just baffled me how expensive and how shit it all seems to be.
I was going to say, this is why I haven't changed my style in about 8 or 9 years, because I just don't like spending money. But more importantly, it's a lot of money, so it's easier just to buy the same thing from supermarkets, where you can still get the odd bit of decent clothing.
Yeah, Sainsbury's
is particularly always good. Really good.
Yeah, I've always bought stuff from Sainsbury's, but we've got a massive one up here just outside York, which I thought would be great, you know, for that sort of thing. And most of the clothes in there this year seem to be shit. Or this season, I suppose, you know, from July onwards, I suppose it is, or something like that. They all seem to be shit now as well, and getting expensive. I just couldn't believe it, basically. Just everything's just, it seems to be completely out of control, and I don't know how anyone can afford to wear stuff. Because, you know, when you need new clothes, what are you supposed to do? Just blow £300 or £400 on a few new items of clothing. It seems mental to me. I went in Ralph Lauren up here, and it wasn't that more expensive than other major sort of clothing brands you might be thinking of. There's a section of the like shopping centre up here which has got like Ralph Lauren, Jaeger, and Lacoste, brands like that, and they're not actually that more expensive than places you would consider affordable now. It all seems to be like starting point for everything seems to be £30, unless it's like a cheap, you know, like one colour t-shirt, but that's not good for winter, is it? But everything else seems to be £30. It starts at £30.
I was in a department store in the town centre the other day, and I say the other day, it's like a year or so ago, and they had a Ralph Lauren section, and I wandered over and I saw a jumper and I thought, oh, that's quite a nice jumper. It was £350. Like, who the fuck is spending that on a jumper?
Yeah.
Madness. I suppose, you know, people have got a lot more money, but I just think, that's mad. And all their t-shirts and stuff are like £50. I'm not paying £50 for a t-shirt. That's ridiculous. I don't care how good it is.
Yeah. I mean, that is mental, but I mean, I've seen plenty of shirts that are £30, £40. Button shirts, £40.
I can't remember the last time I've bought clothes that weren't in some sort of sale, to be fair. I don't update my wardrobe at all, really, but that helps by not buying things that are completely devoid of any fashion. I
wouldn't bother. It's just been exhausting. Like, not only is it tiring having to walk around all these places and just be completely fed up by everything you see in there being the same, you know, check shirts and shitty jeans, but like there's very little that's any different. I mean, probably the best shop I've been in over the last few weeks is probably a cross between River Island in terms of like shirts, I'm thinking, and Superdry in terms of like coats, jumpers, hoodies, that sort of thing. Because Superdry, the material is actually good, and yeah, they do like hoodie offers and stuff like that. But like, you can probably get jumpers and stuff in Next still for about £40. But £40 for one jumper when you're like trying to buy several new items of clothing because you've had too much cheese. It's not helpful. helpful at all.
I used to buy quite a bit from Fat Face.
They're the worst now. Yeah, they're so expensive.
The quality's getting worse. I think they're struggling financially, so they're dropping the quality. Prices going up, so I only ever buy in the sale. But even then, they haven't really updated. Like the range is like basically the same every time they bring out this new version of the same jumper. Basically, I say, oh, this,
yeah,
you can't get any variety or anything.
I remember the last time we three were together. That would have been down your way, Ben, wouldn't it? Last time we three were together, and we were in Fat Face for some reason, or one of their sister shops. Like, I don't know what's the other one called, Wet Face or something.
I know it was Fat Face. Yeah. I think I know where you're going with this.
I said to King, like, I'm just going to have a look at this hoodie over here, see how much it is. It was £60, and it was a basic black hoodie, and I thought, oh, I like the look of that, you know, because black works quite well with me, I think. £60, I couldn't believe it. I nearly shit myself in public, you know. I've just been exhausted by it.
Fortunately, you didn't.
I thought it was one of those, and I have toyed with the idea before on whether on this podcast we should bring up more sort of men's topics, you know. Because I'm guessing just by the general tone of our absolute ridiculousness that most of our listeners are going to be male. I haven't seen the stats, but I'm guessing that anyway.
It's about 80%, I think. In terms of followers on Twitter and people that have signed up with proper profiles on these things, it's very heavily skewed towards male listeners, yeah. As you'd expect. I.e. basically the three of us and my wife are the four people that listen.
So, sort of, so there's a 25% coverage of women, I see.
Especially now,
all our mums have switched off.
Yeah,
they've got fed up of it. Don't blame them, to be honest. But yeah, I've toyed with the idea of bringing in more male topics like this. It's one of those things that because we hear a lot about. I mean, the women in our lives, they always tell us, don't they, about, you know, shopping and it's exhausting and, you know, the clothes are terrible and it's been, you know, it's been shit basically. I've got exactly the same sentiment about it now, but at the same time, I don't want to order stuff online and not be able to try it on. So it's just sort of a lose-lose situation, and all these brands just seem shit and really frustrating, and the ones that I thought would be good places to go have turned out to be terrible, and the ones that I thought would be terrible places to go have turned out to be the best of a bad bunch. So that's kind of my mini sort of clothing rant and a general sort of call to arms for listeners and to you two about whether you'd had sort of similar experience and stuff, really. But as you two haven't changed style or needed new clothes, it's kind of, well, hasn't really worked, has it? But you know, that's how I felt about it anyway. Tweet us, Smooth Traffic, if you are a guy or a girl or an alien or some sort of lizard creature who has tried to buy fabric to cover your body with over the last year or so and have thought it's all shit, because I'd like to read about that.
So, because it's Christmas, we've decided to review the mince pies that are on offer from around the country's top supermarkets. And this is very much something that Ben and I will be doing, because apparently John doesn't like mince pies.
They're the worst tasting things in the world. I can't understand why anyone would like them. They're horrendous.
You cultural void, you.
Nice try, Ben.
But I'm getting sucked in.
It ain't going to wash.
Yeah, it's a tradition in our place. We buy mince pies in various different places throughout end of November, early December, so that you can test them all, and then you know which ones to buy for Christmas Day. And by then, you're obviously fed up with them, but anyone who hasn't eaten loads of mince pies, you can at least serve them the best ones.
And obviously, when Ben mentioned this, I was like, well, that feels like the kind of tradition that I'd like to start at my workplace. So we've been through a shit ton of mince pies.
Have you been sharing them, King? Have you been sitting there eating eight? Sorry, six. Every time. Let's talk about your waistline.
I think it might be smaller than John's at this point, but...
Fair chance of that. Fair chance of that. Mine is 80% cheese.
So we're going to put all these up on the website in reviews. And should we sort of tweet them in the run-up to Christmas?
Oh, that sounds like a marvellous idea.
Yeah.
Are you going to call out the shit ones as well? Hey, at so-and-so, your mince pies have made us feel...
underwhelmed.
I feel like cancelling Christmas because of your pie ignorance.
Yeah, maybe. Something along those lines. Probably more along the lines of, hey, Asda, why are you making that fucking terrible pastry?
The Asda ones were the worst.
Oh, is this who we're starting
with? They're just a bit stodgy. The pastry was thin and crumbly, not particularly tasty pastry. One of those ones where you bite into it and the rest of it falls apart in your hand, so you can't even hold it then. Then it just falls apart. And it's they weren't nicely made. They sort of looked like they'd been kicked around on the floor. It's just like...
See, what interests me about this is that we have got our mince pies from completely different shops or different branches of these supermarkets. And yet we've basically come to the same conclusions about most of the pies. So it obviously shows that it's definitely not the individual shops that are just mishandling the products.
That's funny, because I've come to the same conclusion as well.
Hey, what was your conclusion?
What's your conclusion for the Asda mince pies?
Well, I've got the Asda mince pies down as tasting like a Venezuelan car accident.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, dear.
So you didn't try them?
So any that stood out for you, Kingy? I think there was a couple of ones that were fine.
Well, Morrison's. Yeah. Now, you had the Morrison's ones. I had the soft top Morrison's ones, if you will. The lattice top. I wouldn't normally choose a lattice top mince pie. But it was because I already knew that you were having the regular ones. I thought, I'd just mix it up.
So I think if it's the lattice, but it's proper pastry, then that's okay. I thought when you said soft top, they were going to be like iced topped. I was going to have to tell you to get down the stairs, quite frankly.
It would be deserved. Ooh. Most deserved. Ooh. But no, so the Morrison's ones were cut above the Asda ones, certainly. And I think they were... I personally thought they had a decent taste to them. And there weren't too many big chunks of fruit. Because one issue I have with a mince pie is when it's full of massive chunks of sort of your raisins and whatnot.
Okay. So this is where it comes down to personal preference, because I quite like it when there's a bit of definition in it. Although I don't like it when they put rind in, when you get the sort of chunks of the sort of skin or whatever. I don't like that so much.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. Yeah. The sort of skinny bits, if you will.
No, Morrison's were fine. They're probably one of the best value for money, because they're quite cheap.
Oh, definitely.
But pretty good. Because the other ones I tried that I thought were a bit disappointing was Waitrose. They were quite nice, but they did fall apart a little bit. So, they were better than fine, but we paid quite a lot more for those. And the M&S ones, delicious pastry, but way too thick, so it just made it really dry. So they were mostly good, but they just overdid it on the pastry. If they'd had a thinner pastry, I think they would have been a winner. But
we forgot about John. Any thoughts on those, John? Morrison's?
Well, I've got Morrison's down as tasting like a vegan sole.
Okay.
And I've got M&S.
Sole of their foot, or
good question.
Oh, yeah, that's opened the door.
M&S.
I've got M&S down as tasting like a piss-soaked shoe rolled in sand and then toasted.
Right, okay. So okay, yeah, not yes. particularly helpful at all then, really.
Similar to the Asda one, actually, in terms of the flavour, but that's yeah. fine. Mm. How about you, Kingy? Did you try those before?
No, I haven't had the Waitrose or the M&S ones. I have had, though, is some Tesco ones. Regular ones.
Okay.
They were very pleasant. They were on par with the Morrison's ones, I would say. They literally only beat the Morrison's ones by the fact that they weren't the lattice tops. I definitely feel that lattice tops are not the way to go for my personal preference. Yeah. And, yeah, in terms of up against the Morrison's ones, they were pretty similar. But they just edged it out because they had a proper lid on. However, my winner, and not one that I would have gone out of my way to pick up and buy, but one of the guys at work brought them in, Lidl's. Lidl's mince pies. Now, I was initially sceptical because I thought, you know, we'd probably just be reviewing the main supermarkets. But, you know, if someone brings in mince pies, it's your duty to try them. You know, it would be rude of me not to.
I'm suspicious that we've got sponsorship this week and you haven't told me about it.
No, not at all, if only. But yeah, so the Lidl's ones were actually my mince pies of the week. It's only been
you
a week.
You tried all these in a week. Crumbs.
Yeah, there were a lot of crumbs, yeah. And the fact
I
that
don't
I
believe that for a second.
The fact that I restricted myself to only one of each per day was fucking Christmas miracle, my friend, let me tell you. But yeah, the Lidl's one, good thickness of pastry, but not overly thick. Good solid filling, not too skinny, which is the term we'll now use. And it had a good, slightly citrusy taste, I suppose. But it was very pleasant. And yeah, presentation-wise, unlike the fucking garbage from Asda, they stayed in one piece. They didn't break apart as you tried to peel off the silver foil wrapper. You know, solid.
I'm surprised you bother. I thought you'd just eat that as well.
No, yeah, it doesn't go through you, right?
I've got Lidl down as tasting like a bleached coral reef. So, difference of opinion there, King. But
I forgot to ask about Waitrose, John. Yeah, did you have anything for Waitrose?
I mean, I've got Waitrose down here, and I've got that down as tasting like a Chernobylan basement.
Right, okay. Marvellous. Can I ask a score? Oh, not out of 10, okay.
Yeah.
So everyone's on par for you at the moment.
Yeah, it's fairly close. I got to say, it's fairly close. They're all currently on 0 out of 10.
I'm excited to see what you think of the final one that Ben's gonna talk about now.
So my favourite one was the so far. I mean, there's still, you know, as we record this, there's still 10 days till Christmas, so we can certainly get a few more varieties
in. Is it the Tesco one?
Tesco finest all butter with Courvoisier vs cognac.
Yeah,
And they were good. They had good. Good tasty pastry, but not too thick. Filling was tasty. It was alcoholic, but it wasn't like punch you in the face alcoholic, because sometimes they put too much in and you're just like, all I can taste is cheap something or other. But it had a nice flavour of cognac. Nice and tangy. Soft fruit. Nicely finished. Didn't fall apart. Almost perfect, I would say. Certainly the best ones I've had this year.
Well.
Comfortably.
There we go.
They were a step above the rest. So if you want to buy any mince pies, Tesco finest all butter with Courvoisier vs cognac, or King's
Lidl's
choice, Lidl's.
See, I feel like I'm on a completely different, you know, mission here. But I've got Tesco's finest with the cognac down as tasting like a horse's toenail left out overnight on a nightclub toilet.
I mean, I'll be honest. It's the finest ones, and it feels like you have pulled out all the stops for that description. So it does feel like it's a cut above in terms of the description so far.
Yeah.
I also got 0 out of 10.
0 out of 10, right, okay, sure.
Yeah. Well, there you go. We'll put the full reviews on our website, a link to that. And I've even taken pictures of them all for you, so you can see, so you can find them easily in the shops.
And also, if like one of my colleagues, you bring in mince pies that were homemade by your significant other, they are not admissible into these kind of competitions, so no. Don't bring that shit in here.
Yeah, there's only so many mince pies we can eat a day.
Wow, I've just imagined a celebrity chef walking into your office, King, who's baked some mince pies for you at home, and you telling them to not bring that shit in here.
That's why you can't have the Heston ones from Waitrose.
In the words of the Lonely Island, I would take them and throw them to the ground.
Wow, fair enough. Fair enough.
Anyway, that's mince pies here. Let us know if you found better ones.
Well, that puts the wrapping on this episode of Smooth Traffic.
Oh, God.
If only you could see my cheesy grin right now. What a pun. What a pun. Thanks for listening, all of this year. I don't think we'll do a New Year's episode because, I mean, what's the point? But yeah, thanks for everything this year. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the tweets. Thanks for all the faxes. Some people think they're not real, but they are. Yeah, basically have a good Christmas, have a good New Year, have plenty of cheese, plenty of good quality alcohol, and don't eat mince pies. It's a fairly simple thing. And we'll see you all in 2019, upon which we will all be a year older.
It's not really how it works, but...
Is it?
Merry Christmas, everyone!
Bye! Merry fucking Christmas.
Before you go, back to our tales of WhatsApp, I sent a terrible joke to Rob, and it went, he's making a list, he's checking it twice, he's going to find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is in contravention of Article 4 of the General Data Protection Regulation. Rob, being very sad, replied with the following, I'm GDPR'd up to the eyeballs these days, so I enjoyed that very much. There's probably some clever retort to be made about whether naughty or nice information should be accessible via an FOI request, i.e. if someone's been to prison, ergo they're probably naughty. You just have to presume that everyone else is inherently nice. Having said that, of course, while Santa is presumed to live in Lapland, which is part of Finland, if he were to relocate his workshop north to Norway, he'd no longer be living in an EU member state and, as such, would probably find out much easier to circumvent such legislation. Have I ever thought this? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone!
Jesus Christ.
Yep, he features.
Oh, this is what I have to put up with.
Oh, dear.